Hello, hello, and welcome to the Wing Woman podcast, hosted by journalists and best mates, Frankie Gradden, that's me, and Charlie Gowans Eglinton, that's her. Morning!
Morning, Franks, how are you?
I'm all right. Was that shrill? Sorry.
Oh, no, no. That's how I like to start my days. I can almost imagine you're in bed with me.
You lucky duck. How's tricks?
Well, funny you should call them tricks, because I've been getting back on the old dating apps.
Have you now? Which one have you plumped for, or which ones have you plumped for?
I have gone for just one.
Mm-hmm.
Hinge.
Nice.
I had deleted them all at the beginning of lockdown 3, just because I was finding that dating during the pandemic was very stressful, and especially in lockdown, because you wouldn't actually be technically allowed to see anyone. Up until that point, you could sit in a pub garden with someone. But it was all just very fraught because there was so much pressure on it, because you were taking a risk. Obviously, every time you see a new person, you're taking a risk. You didn't know where they'd been, what risks they were taking. But there was this pressure to just bubble with people and settle down with someone straight away. And the last date I went on, which was like the night before lockdown, he was very nice, but he was just really intense. And I think that is how a lot of people felt, that they had to lock someone in before they went into lockdown rather than be alone. And I found that just made dating not fun. Then for a second date, he suggested going for a walk in the park to feed the ducks.
Mm.
And I was like, I do not want to go on a second date, and I do not want to be on the apps right now.
No.
Because actually, if that is the best we can do, I mean, I know you've got to find a silver lining, but I don't want to feed any ducks.
It's not particularly romantic or flirty.
Bread's not even good for them.
No.
And I'm not in a Nora Ephron film, okay? That's not how I live my life. Anyway, I'm back on the apps. Very little has changed. People are still making the same gags. So with Hinge, there's certain prompts like, we'll get on if, and then you fill in the blank. Or you should not go out with me if, and there's loads of people who have for that one. You've lost your sense of smell and taste and developed a cough. And it's like, that is not a funny joke.
No, too soon.
No, but they made that at the beginning of the first lockdown. So last March, that's what people had in response to that prompt. Not me, but people. The virus had just started and people didn't really know what to expect, but those were the symptoms. It's been a year, guys. Think of some new material. This can't be your only joke. And lots of people for the give me travel tips prompt have got my local park. No. Have you agreed on this, that this is a one funny joke that we could all share? No. My main takeaway, though, is that I am not the type of my type. I didn't think I had a type, but I seem to have a type, because Hinge now does the thing where it gives you highlights of the day and it thinks that these people are my type. And I was like, you don't know me, Hinge. This isn't, you know, that show on Netflix, one with the DNA testing and stuff. You don't know me. It does know me. I fancy all of those people in the recommended daily thing. Those are not the people sending me likes.
Who's your type then?
Scrappy haired tossers, you know?
Perfect. Fantastic type from you.
But I am not their type.
Right.
I assume, because I'm mostly getting likes from earnest men seem to enjoy me, and I don't enjoy earnest men who write very sincere things in their prompts and talk about just wanting people to be nice to them. Sorry, I'm not looking to be somebody's mother. That's not what I'm dating for.
Mm.
What did you find when you were dating? Cast your mind back to when you met Benifer Lopez.
Belo.
Frankie's husband, Ben, who I call Benifer Lopez. When you met him on
Tinder, the OG.
Did you find that you liked the same people who liked you? Or did you have my similar unrequited?
No, I definitely had unrequited.
I just wonder if types are reciprocal. Are there people out there who just like the people who like them?
I mean, there must be, because don't you often see couples and you're just like, God, you are just such a matching pair, you know? I mean, obviously we live in East London, so I'm forever walking past hipster couples. But then also, what I tend to think happens with couples is that when you meet, you might be quite different, but slowly you do merge into one another.
Yeah.
So perhaps on the dating apps, it was opposites attract, or they weren't initially your type. But then at about the 6 month mark, you slowly just merge into the same person, and all of a sudden you're wearing matching.
You've got matching grey tracksuits, grout fits, and white trainers.
Hell yeah, we do. See, I always fancied the arty, you know, would pack up their life into a back of a camper van and drive to Cornwall type, because that is how I imagined my life to go.
Yeah.
When in reality, I attracted accountants, Charlie, which is what I've married.
Plural accountants or just Ben?
Just square little accountants. No, but there were some equally crushingly boring jobs. Sorry, if anyone's an accountant. And actually, if you are an accountant and numbers is your thing, I think it can be very satisfying as a career. But obviously on paper, it just looks chronic.
Did Ben hatfish you?
Did he hatfish me? If anyone doesn't know, Ben's got no hair. No, because when I met Ben, he had hair.
He had some hair.
There was a smattering.
But I just asked because that is a term, but I don't think it was a term when you were dating. That came out later.
I hadn't heard of hatfishing. It's hysterical. But be warned, anybody who is dating and looks at a profile with hats. See, I think hair is an important requirement for you. I really am happy with a bald head on a man. I think it's very sexy.
But the thing is with men is that the amount of ones that I read that are just like, I don't date curvy girls, no tall girls, I only like blondes, just looking for big tits, ooey. And then if you are like, I'd quite like a man who's taller than me, they're like, this is disgusting. Hello, Alfredo.
Sorry if anyone can hear. Alfie has joined us. The thing about online dating that I found the most upsetting was the men I thought were on my sort of level wanted to go out with supermodels.
Mm.
So the guys that I was just like, yeah, okay, they look like my level of attractiveness. I reckon they'd go out with me, that sort of thing. They actually wanted Emily Ratajkowski.
Ben wanted Emily Ratajkowski.
I would imagine every single man on this planet wants Emily Ratajkowski. But without sounding like a dickhead, the calibre that approached me, I was shocked that that was my pool to pick from. That was a rude awakening.
Well, because I look at certain people and I think I would be punching, for sure, but you're hot. And then I look at other people and I'm like, yeah, maybe. But what you're suggesting is that those people that I'm thinking, oh, yeah, maybe, wouldn't even date me. Which is a worrying thought.
Well, I just think the confidence that must come with being a man in his late 20s to mid 30s on a dating app must be extraordinary, because they are in such high demand that I think they can just pick whatever they want.
That's a cheerful thought. What have you been up to?
Sorry, was that Debbie Downer?
No, it wasn't.
But good luck to you. I want you to make the gag that you said to me the other day.
Oh, I announced on Instagram, now that we have an exit plan for lockdown, I was coming up with this exit plan, but I considered calling it my grand reopening of my legs.
Which I love.
Chance would be a fine thing at this rate. I don't have high hopes.
Fingers crossed, babes.
You know that one for semi-famous people? What is it, Raya or something?
Yeah.
They waitlisted me.
No, still.
Yeah, this is actually ages ago. I just haven't talked about it. Because I was hoping that they would approve me and then I could talk about it at length and write an article about it. But a friend of mine, who is not famous, but is an entrepreneur, she just sent me her link, because you get a friend pass that you can send to a friend, and said, at least it's a different one. You should give it a try. You might meet someone nice. Waitlisted. Okay.
Do they not know who you are?
I mean...
rude.
Hello. I've got a blue tick and nothing else going for me.
You're the voice of a generation, Chaz.
Thanks. A very small one. Just me and you. And just a very geographically specific generation. Anywho's, what have you been up to for now?
Oh my God. I'm being trolled by our neighbourhood foxes.
You can say our neighbourhood WhatsApp for a minute.
No, I've had to put that on mute because that was set up at the beginning of lockdown for those in need. Mm-hmm. And now it's just people asking if they've got a number for a good plumber, which actually is quite useful because good tradespeople are hard to find. And I don't always trust a Google search. But I mean, it's every day. And at the moment, the chat on the group is that the Virgin Wi-Fi is really ropey. So everyone's piling in and moaning about it.
Your Wi-Fi is terrible.
We're on Plusnet, which is equally ropey. Anyway, neighbourhood foxes. Ours really kicked up at the beginning of the first lockdown. I don't know if you noticed this. Mm. I wasn't aware that we had such a fox issue, but we've got a whole family. They are sweet. They sleep in the gardens in the day. They are lovely, but they also poo in our tulip patch, which is annoying.
Is that a good fertiliser though?
No, no, not even.
Tulips don't want fertiliser anyway, do they? Because they've got it in the bulb.
A fox poo is very similar to a dog poo.
Oh, horrid.
Which is also quite similar to a human poo. So it really sort of looks like someone's just shat in your garden. It doesn't have that sort of agriculture-y vibe.
I've never seen a dog poo and thought, could be human. But maybe I am seeing human poo sometimes and just assuming they're dog poos.
I remember walking to the tube station in Brixton once upon a time, and there was a wet mattress down a side alley and a fox poo right in the middle of the mattress. And I just thought, how funny that that fox had decided to go right into the middle and do a poo.
Problem with being a fox, it's nowhere comfy to do your business, you know?
Anyway, so just after Alfie was born, there's a fox that makes a baby's crying sound, which gives me a heart attack every time it kicks up because I think Alfie's in some sort of extraordinary pain. And it's not, it's just this little baby fox. Because foxes crying is one of the worst sounds I've ever heard.
It's the mating sound that's particularly distressing though, that's screeching.
It's terrible. Anyway, things reached a head at the weekend. We looked out the window, noticed that there was a bag of rubbish that had been strewn across the back garden. Got our rubbish bag, got our gloves on, went down to tidy it up. Guess what it was?
It couldn't be a bag of fox poo.
Dirty nappies.
Oh no.
Sanitary wear.
Sanitary wear as a genre.
Both pads and tampons. All over the back garden.
So it wasn't your rubbish?
No, none of them were mine. Which was devastating because obviously my whole house is full of dirty nappies. And it was like the fox went out of its way to go and find someone else's dirty nappies and just chuck them all over my garden. And then thought, that's not enough. I'm going to get some used sani pads and do that as well. Absolute dickhead.
Also, that's medical waste, isn't it? That's unsafe is what that is.
It was funny, especially because I had the baby, so Ben had to clear it all up.
Okay, yeah, that's better.
Oh, yeah.
For a minute, I thought you were wearing the gloves, but you were just using the royal we.
Yeah.
The marital we. In the same way that we have a baby now, obviously.
Well, exactly. We're breastfeeding at the moment, Peter.
But you also wrote a piece this week.
I did.
Your first journalistic commission since you had Alf. How was that?
It was, I mean, always an absolute pleasure to get a commission. Thank you to the Times.
And it was a great piece.
Thank you. So I wrote about the new ilk of social media mumfluencers who are being a bit more warts and all about the depiction of motherhood, which I'm not a mumfluencer, but I would put myself
I
in...
I don't know.
I would put myself in the category of oversharing about the realities of motherhood and birth, etc. But I've definitely been tapping in to these women much more since having Alfie. So I wrote about that, something I was very interested in, passionate in, thrilled to write about it. But obviously newspaper deadlines, you know, they're a tight turnaround. And it really hit home how hard it is to work when you have a baby. Mm. Absolutely nuts. I ended up waking up at 4 a.m. to write it because I just don't know how else you get it done. Obviously, I don't have childcare at the moment. Had I had childcare, it would be a different story. But, you know, with lockdown, everyone's got childcare issues. And not that I needed to experience it myself to know how hard it is for parents to work without childcare in lockdown. But geez Louise, it's actually sort of impossible.
I think as well, with a kind of job where you are just writing on your laptop and you don't necessarily need to have meetings that you're checking into and FaceTime with people, there would perhaps be an expectation that that might be more doable because you can just fit things in as and when. Mm-hmm. And as a freelancer, just think, well, you can take commissions because you could just do that when the baby's sleeping, which obviously is not the reality. I'm guessing.
No, and I think I probably was guilty of thinking that before I had Alfie. you know, I can just write in naps, I can write at the end of the day when he's gone to sleep. But the reality is, the baby naps for 20 minutes at a time. You've literally had time to have a wee, put the kettle on, and then he's awake again. And then when he's awake, you have to be on all the time. Well, this baby, anyway, doesn't want to be in a bouncer whilst I do some work. And then by the time 6 o'clock rolls around and it's bath time and bedtime for the baby, I mean, it might as well be bath time and bedtime for you. You're just absolutely shattered. It's really full on. So it's called the juggle for a reason, because it is, you're constantly juggling when you get it done. It was a real shock to me of how difficult it is when you have a kid. So that's going to be something to get my head around. But I've been speaking to mums who have kids of a similar age to me, and they are going back to the office. They have jobs which are very much office based, and their offices are reopening, and it isn't so sort of flexible as a freelance gig or writing. And they're just so nervous about trying to balance it with their babies and their babies' needs, and still trying to be a good mum, but also be good at their job and retain the career that they have worked so hard for, and in a lot of cases the career that defines them to an extent. I'm generalising hugely, but I think in London especially, we are a community of high achievers, and our jobs are much more than 9 to 5s that pay the bill. They are something that is a passion.
Well, because I think you don't choose London necessarily for the work-life balance.
Heck no.
That's true of cities, I think, in general.
Mm.
You choose it, yes, for the bustle and the amenities and things like that, but city life is so hectic and expensive, and you're commuting in normal times, obviously, for hours at a time. And I think obviously it has its benefits, but we're certainly very aware of the negatives of city life as well. And I think people became more aware of them in lockdown. But yes, I think you choose it if your job is something that defines you. And I know it's very unpopular at the moment to talk about jobs that define you. And there were a lot of articles over the last year about how the dream job doesn't really exist, and how city workers are just all drones on a treadmill, clocking in the hours and forgetting to have a life. But certainly I have always lived to work rather than worked to live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just funding a lifestyle because my life is actually my job, and they're too interlinked.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you have a baby, if you have found a job that you love or that offers you a level of satisfaction that doesn't sort of then get replaced necessarily by having a kid. I haven't found that anyway. When I wrote that piece, it gave me a different satisfaction that being a mum and looking after Alf gives me. But I want both of those. They both make up me now. And I don't really want to sacrifice on either of them. So then you are constantly trying to achieve both, and hashtag having it all, which is difficult. It's hard. And I think over the last year, the series of lockdowns have highlighted how much more women are responsible for the childcare and how much more of a juggle it tends to be for the woman in the relationship, if it is a heteronormative relationship, than it is for the bloke. And that's a tough one. You don't want to sacrifice on either. And I know everyone says you can't have it all, but you want to try and have a lot of it.
Well, it doesn't stop us from wanting it all. Just because someone says you can't have all of those things,
well, yes,
doesn't mean that you then go, oh, fine, yeah, I'll just choose this and then I'll never think of that ever again.
Yeah, I mean, my head is still sort of spinning from it, because before having Alf, if I had to do a tight turnaround commission, and this is the thing with writing, whilst fantastic because you can just do it on a laptop and you don't really need to keep to normal 9 to 5 hours, if you do end up doing a bit of an all-nighter, you can catch up on your sleep the next day. But obviously when you've got a baby, they won't let you catch up on your sleep all day. So then you spend the next 4 days feeling more shattered than usual and doing things like putting the kettle back in the fridge. So it's definitely something I'm, you know, trying to figure out. And it is rare that I speak to a woman who has sussed this. Even those who have sussed it to an extent feel tremendous guilt both ways. When they're not with their child and they're working, they feel like they're doing a bad job of being a mum. And then when they are with their child and not working, they feel like they're dropping the ball at work. Ah!
So it's a year since lockdown one started.
Sure is.
Since Bojo announced that we'd just be for 3 weeks just doing this to, you know, flatten that curve.
And we all were like, how nice to just have 3 weeks at home. We don't have to get on public transport. We can just all make nice salads at home for lunch.
And people shared their working from home outfits, working from home fits.
Yes. And their desk setups.
So I suppose I don't really need to ask you if your priorities or life has changed over the last year, because obviously it has. This time last year, you were a month pregnant, maybe a few, 5 or 6 weeks?
Yeah, about 4 or 5 weeks, I think.
So life has completely changed.
Life has completely changed. It's kind of hard to extricate what's changed because of the pandemic and what's changed because of baby, because they're so linked. It's all happened at the same time. But I mean, this time last year, it feels like a lifetime ago. I mean, I remember being on the bed on the phone to you and Ben came in and said, they've announced national lockdown. And that feels like forever ago.
Well, I wrote about my pandemic pivot, as they called it, for Grazia, the issue out this week, because I quit my job on March the 6th, I want to say, last year, just before lockdown, worked from home a week before lockdown was announced, and then worked out my notice period at home, had my Zoom leaving thing. They sent me the M&S spread. Somebody packed up my desk about 6 months later. So the notebook I had left and the pen with the lid off that I had left on March the 5th arrived at my house in September, maybe. Obviously, that's not at all what I expected when I resigned from my job. I was expecting this exciting freelance life and working in a lot of cafes, which have all been closed, and not quite so much time just by myself in my flat. Although, obviously, I was expecting to work from home to an extent. I can't believe it's been a year, but I also can't believe it's only been a year.
Mm.
And as you say, I mean, you've had a baby, so your life has changed completely. My life has changed completely because I quit my job. Obviously, I'm still a journalist, but I'm working with a different team now, a different office, writing about different things. So a lot has changed. But I'm actually a little bit anxious about when the lockdown lifts, that I won't have noticed things changing. Obviously, I've noticed the big changes, but things like socialising, that I won't have noticed the shift, because everyone always warns you about when your friends have babies and how completely your life changes, because obviously you're not able to just go to the pub for 5 hours on a weeknight. You have a timeline that you have to work with, especially with a small baby. And I haven't really noticed that change because we haven't been able to go anywhere and we haven't been able to go on a holiday, because normally you and I would go on a summer holiday, just the two of us. And we haven't been able to go to the pub and we haven't been able to do any of those things. I'm kind of expecting that I won't notice the full difference of my life until we're out of lockdown and I could go back to normal. And then I realise normal's not there anymore. Do you feel like that?
Yes, I absolutely feel like that. It's like normality has been suspended and we're all expecting it to go back to exactly how it was.
Exactly.
On the end of February last year. And it won't, because time has moved on. Whenever I think of the summer and I get excited about being out again, I imagine myself in a restaurant at 9 p.m. having had the best part of a bottle of rosé and laughing like drains. And then I think, oh, well, I'm not going to be doing that, am I? Because I still have a baby at home. And, you know, unless someone wants to spend their first summer of freedom babysitting my child, doubtful, then I'm going to be at home. Likewise with holidays. Yay, I want to hop on a plane and go somewhere hot and sunny. And not saying you can't do that with a kid, but it's a completely different setup. So I don't think my brain has quite caught up with how life is going to be. I think with new parents, half of the sort of shock of having a kid, and it is a shock, is that your life is almost overnight unrecognisable. But I think in lockdown, it probably hasn't been for me and Ben, because we've just been doing exactly what we were doing anyway, albeit with a screaming baby to look after. But we're still in watching Netflix, ordering Deliveroo, going to bed at 10 o'clock because there's nothing else to do. So I think that will be really interesting, using the word interesting to mask terrifying.
In that Grazia piece, I shared a spread with Hannah Armassi, who is a journalist who I used to work with. Actually, we both worked at Grazia years ago. And she has moved out of London. So Hannah has left Leighton, where she lived with her husband and her son, and they've moved to Eastbourne. It looks idyllic, and I follow her on Instagram, and it sounds wonderful. But even things like that, that's a huge life shift. And it seems like lots of people have done that. Certainly we know people who've moved out of the city, have wanted to redress that work-life balance, who don't want to go back to long commutes and sky-high rents and all those things. Life changes like that, people might not have noticed the shifts, because actually until you come to a weekend where you could do anything, you won't realise the difference. Because right now, if all of the restaurants are closed, all of the pubs are closed, you're not allowed to see your friends, then it doesn't matter if you're 1 mile away from them or 50 miles away from them. Because as you say, you're just in your flat watching TV, get a delivery, go to bed at 10 o'clock. And that's the same everywhere. So I wonder if actually maybe this is going to be a wider thing, that for all of us who have made some kind of change, whether it's a change in job or having a child or moving somewhere new, that all of these things that we've done aren't actually going to sink in until we go back to normal and then realise that normal is completely different.
I agree. And I think what I'm feeling nervous about is that FOMO element of it, which I think you would potentially also feel if you had moved out of the city or moved away from pals, is that first night we're all in the pub and you can't be there for reason X, Y, and Z. Or even if you've got a puppy in lockdown, you know, dogs need feeding. And suddenly you can't just pick up where you left off. I think there's an element of that I'm feeling nervous of. And I imagine probably quite a few people are feeling a little bit nervous of it. And also this lockdown has been financially tough on a lot of people. Again, to an extent, my Instagram feed has just been full of people walking around their local park and taking pictures of the cherry blossom. But as soon as it is full of people in the Amalfi Coast and Nice and having all the swanky holidays, etc., I think that will really get to a lot of people.
It will be very divisive.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, I think that will really show who it has impacted financially and who it hasn't.
I'm interested to see when the lockdown lifts, because obviously the government have put in place that we're keeping the travel ban until June, but there's a Stanley Johnson clause, as one MP called it. So you know Boris Johnson's father in lockdown last year flew to his Greek villa. I think it was in lockdown. Anyway, it was advised not to fly. I don't know whether it was actually a hard lockdown, just so Stanley can't sue me. And then he said it was because he needed to get his Greek villa ready for guests because he rented it out. And obviously, I imagine Stanley doesn't use a management service or anything like that. I imagine he changes the sheets himself, hands-on kind of guy. And that's just what he taught Boris, you know, really get your hands dirty.
Roll your sleeves up.
Don't just order Daylesford hampers, you know, cook yourself. So there is a Stanley Johnson clause. So people with second homes are going to be able to fly to them to ready them for guests.
I see.
So that's going to be really enjoyable on our Instagrams. And it's going to be really hard to not hate people.
It is going to be really hard. Yeah, I think that mute button is going to be being heavily used. Is there anything that you have learnt about yourself in lockdown this past year, or anything about the wider world? I've seen this question quite a lot this week.
No, I'm proud of myself. I think we should all be proud of ourselves because this has been incredibly difficult. I think this has required so much resilience from all of us. I found this last month actually incredibly difficult, and I just feel really lethargic and not creative, and I'm finding it really hard to come up with ideas because I'm just in this void, and where do the ideas come from? And I'm not talking to anyone. And I think because the end is in sight, it's almost made this period feel worse for me. I've been struggling to sit at my desk and be able to write something good, which is obviously my livelihood and how I pay my rent, so that's not great. But we've all had periods like that. We've all had bad patches. But I think we've all been incredibly resilient, and I'm proud of that. What about you?
I think what's been lovely to see is how as human default, we then try to make the best of a situation, which I think is very heartening. I think there are so many opportunities where you can really lose faith in humankind. So to see people rallying together, whether it's clapping for the NHS, whether it's the charitable walks people have been doing, whether it's even just social media sing-alongs, cook-alongs, I think it's really proven that when the chips are down, people tend to try and help each other get along and put some glitter on a turd of a situation. So I think that's been really cheering. What have I learned about myself? No matter how much time I have, I will not learn another language. I will not start watercolour painting. I will not read all the books off my bedside table.
No.
I am not that person, Chaz.
Mine's personal grooming. Even saving the time of a commute, even with no one to see, I am never going to blow dry my hair every time I wash it or paint my nails. I don't think I've painted my nails once in a year. I'm just never going to be a groomed human being.
Well, because the weather's been really nice this week and I put on some sandals the other day and then caught sight of my absolute hooves and was horrified.
You do have feet made of paper, though. Honestly, if I look at them, they just break open and start bleeding.
They're so awful.
Poor little feet.
But also I have sandpaper soles that you could grate cheese on the cragginess of my heels. So I thought I'll do that thing which everyone always says to do and I hate it. Put moisturiser on your feet and then put a sock on. To me, that is one of the worst feelings ever. But I thought, well, I will do that because I need to sort out this foot situation for sandal weather. Obviously, they were then baby soft. Wore my sandals out, got a blister.
Perfect.
So there you go. Maybe personal grooming is not the one. Maybe you had it right all along, Chaz.
But could we just lower societal expectation of personal grooming? Because this might also be a problem that I'm having on the dating apps, you know?
I see what you mean.
If I'm just this craggy little husk of a person, maybe I need to find a dating app for me. Craglist. What have you been reading?
So I read a great piece on Bureau by Charlotte May, who's actually a wonderful artist, but she has written a piece.
And illustrated.
Yes, and beautiful illustration. So she's written a piece called Hollywood, Anti-Asian Hate and Me. And it's obviously in the wake of the Stop Asian Hate movement, following on from the horrendous murder in Atlanta, but also the tremendous jump in Asian hate crime this year due to the pandemic and certain world leaders calling it the Kung Flu. Awful, awful. So she writes about her own experiences of racism growing up. So she is mixed race, Chinese and Caucasian, grew up in the UK, talks very movingly about the racism that she experienced when she was younger, the insults that she would get when she was at school. I mean, it breaks your heart. But what she also talks about is the portrayal of Asian women in Hollywood and how they are often fetishized and made out as objects of sexual desire. And I think reading it, it's so screamingly obvious that this is exactly what happens. I mean, I can think of so many films where the sort of temptress, the seductress, is this quote unquote exotic woman, and she has no character development whatsoever. She's just there as this object of sexual desire. And they list a few, the Austin Powers, Fook Me, Fook You twins, Full Metal Jacket, where that me so horny, me love you long time that gets banded around a lot. And as Charlotte talks about, you know, people have hurled that at her in the street. And this very one-dimensional, offensive characterization of Asian women has been perpetuated by Hollywood, and how that objectification then can so often lead to violence. She links to a post that Diet Prada did on their Instagram page, and it lists a handful of films that do it, you know, stretching right back to the 70s, 80s, right up into contemporary times. They pick up on Mean Girls, which was shockingly, I think, about 20 years ago, which just blows my mind.
Not possible, because we're only in our 20s.
Exactly. Oh God. But you know, the trope has been perpetuated for just such an awful long time, and it's meant that, you know, when she was at school she had people asking her if her vagina was sideways and talking about happy endings in terms of massage parlors, and oh God, it's just, it breaks your heart. But it's so important that we read this and notice something that we just haven't even considered. It's just been what we've seen time and time again. And I think there is nothing more poignant than someone telling you from personal experience how it's affected their life.
I think what has struck me, because I've been reading these pieces this week, I read Charlotte's piece, I recommended Susie Lau's piece for Grazia in the newsletter, and we will link again to the GoFundMe and the change.org petition, which is asking the government to officially condemn this racism, these racist acts. And Lau was one of the founders of the Stop Asian Hate movement. But reading her pieces, reading another piece that I found on Vogue.co.uk, which is I Need to Use My Voice, 12 Young Women on the Realities of Living with Anti-Asian Hate. These stories are all personal and all different, but all the same in lots of ways. Actually, Charlotte and Susie both talked about having people shout, Konnichiwa, at them in the street. So much of this is obviously a universal experience for Asian, and specifically Susie talks about East and Southeast Asian communities. And reading that Vogue.co.uk piece, these are 12 young women, they're predominantly in London, maybe one was in America, and it's so widespread, this racism, and it's so familiar. As you read their stories, you just see it again and again and again. But obviously, from our position of white privilege, it's not something that we and a wider society has considered as much. And yes, it has taken these violent racist attacks, especially in America, but in the UK as well. And the pandemic has brought out this racism that already existed, but more into the spotlight. But it was there. And I think what's really struck me from reading all of these accounts is that it's a constant in their lives, and we're only just talking about it now. I'm sure if we sort it out, people were having those conversations, but the fact that the media hasn't talked about Asian hate, hasn't really talked about this kind of racism in any meaningful way before, I think is quite shocking. We'll put all of those links below, so do read them. Is there anything else you'd like to recommend, Franks?
I would, Chaz. I want to recommend Wine in a Tin.
Oh, tell me more. I like wine in all of its
vessels.
I was going to say forms, but the form of the wine doesn't change.
So we've had wine in a bottle, we've had wine in a bag, we've had wine in a box.
But tell me about the tin.
2022 is a fish, the year of the wine in a tin.
It's only 2021.
Is it? Oh my God. How is it not 2022 yet?
We are so ahead of the curve. If you are listening to this, you are listening to the future.
Oh God. Anyway, Wine in a Tin, which is absolutely perfect because it is going to be yet again the summer of the picnic, and nothing worse than being in a park with a bottle of wine. You realize you've bought a cork bottle, not a screw top bottle. Does anyone have a bottle opener? No. Does the little local shop on the fringe of the park sell bottle openers? No. Am I smashing it open? Someone tries to do something weird with a shoe to try and get it open.
Ooh.
Awful. The remedy to this is wine in a tin. I got sent a Malbec in a sexy little tin from a brand called Drink Nice, and it was delicious. They also do rosé, white wine, sparkling wine, and cocktails, which I thought was fun.
Okay. Does the tin look like wine in a box?
No.
Is it square, or is it like bottle shaped, or is it like the shape of a fish?
It's like the shape of your favourite fizzy pop beverage.
Great.
I mean, they have all different decorations on, but you know, they're cool. They wouldn't look out of place on your Instagram feed if you were to Instagram your park picnic, which I'm expecting a lot of us will be doing.
I think it would be fun if they were shaped like a giant croissant, for example.
Yeah, or like a bunch of grapes.
Yes, oh, a bunch of grapes is a good one because it actually has the relation to wine.
You know, really speak to the heritage of the wine.
So smart.
Yeah. I know. But they're brilliant because it's like the posh tinny. Chuck a few tinnies in your bag, crack one open. I mean, you could even just swig it as you're walking around, you know, if you wanted to do some casual, inappropriate, middle of the day drinking and you didn't want people to judge you because they're not immediately obvious.
Well, you just judged us and yourself by saying inappropriate.
Well, if it's before 5 o'clock and you're not on holiday, it's not deemed to be the done thing. But, you know, fuck it. A lunchtime tipple is probably what we're all a bit desperado for.
Great.
Check it out. So the brand I've tried is Drink Nice. I can't speak to all tinned wines as to whether they're nice or not, but the Drink Nice ones are. There's also quite a fun little subscription club called Brixton Wine Club, which has got all the like jazzy font and fun day glow colours, which gets you in the summer mood. And you can order a one-off juice box, which has lots of different wines in, or if you love them that much, you can then set up a subscription.
Great.
And they'll send you them every month. And I just think wine in the post is the nicest thing. What about you?
I would like to recommend, I mean, wine as a concept, always I'd like to recommend, but I would like to recommend an article that I read. It was in the Sunday Times, and it is Orlando Bloom doing a life in the day.
Oh my God, it's so ridiculous.
It's excellent. So this is the summary of his normal day-to-day life. Obviously, he is a film star. Obviously, he's in a relationship with Katy Perry, who is a pop star. They have a baby. So we're imagining, Franks, they've got a new baby. We're all in lockdown anyway, although I think they're in California, so maybe they're not in lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
But they're probably going to have a similar life to yours, right?
You would think.
No. I chant for 20 minutes every day, religiously. I've had a Buddhist practice since I was 16, so that's infiltrated my whole being. I'll read a bit of Buddhism, and then I'll type it up and add it to my Instagram stories. Okay. He had me. He didn't, because I didn't have a Buddhist practice. But I thought, great, he's found what works for him.
Mm-hmm.
He lost me when he types up the Buddhism for Instagram stories. What?
Does that not then undo your Zen balanced state?
Yeah, he says he does that, but otherwise he doesn't look at his phone in the morning. He just does that, but he doesn't think about it. That's not how it works. You're on your phone.
Yeah, it's in your consciousness. Any sort of I am at one with the elements has gone out the window as soon as you've gone on Instagram, surely.
He also takes some brain octane oil, which apparently is just coconut oil, but a really expensive version.
Oh.
From a particular part of the coconut. The coconut G-spot, I don't know. But he mixes that with some green powders, so that doesn't sound delicious. And then, even this bit that I could do at home, I mean, I don't have any Lego, but I'm sure lots of people do and could just build a Lego car while they're working. But even that I didn't find relatable.
What, that he spends his afternoons doing Lego?
Yeah.
No, I think that's completely odd.
Imagine, even if you were just on a Zoom meeting and you just, oh, this is helping me to just stay calm, I'm just going to build this Lego. I don't think people would be okay with that. Also, here's a question for you. To bond with his baby, he does some eye gazing, he calls it, to connect with her. Do you?
I thought that phrase was funny, eye gazing. So you look at your baby.
Eye contact.
I can't say I consciously devote time to eye gazing with Alfie, but we probably clock up a few minutes during the day. I thought his unashamed attempt to try and get the baby to say daddy first is mean.
Yes.
For Katy Perry. I'm sorry. Did Orlando Bloom carry a baby in his womb for 9 months? No. I think Katy Perry has deserved the right for the baby's first word to be mama.
Or just something more fun.
Yeah.
Banana. My mum can't remember what my first word was. Dean, that's rude. Don't you think this should be a formative moment of her life?
Yeah, but you're the...
She can't remember my sister's either.
Oh, I was going to say, you're the second child and that's just what happens.
Do you know what your first word was?
No idea.
What is this? Maybe we need our parents to be a bit more woo-woo, or at least just write it down.
We were born ages ago, though.
I know, but like, I'm not saying they should have been eye-gazing with me, but like, could we make a note? Jesus.
I thought it was funny when he said he woke up in the morning at 6:30 and then checked his sleep tracker to see if he'd slept well. Surely you know if you've slept well. I thought that was completely strange.
The whole thing was quite striking.
You've changed, Orlando Bloom. You've changed.
But maybe we never really knew him. We assume that British people don't do woo-woo things.
Yeah.
We assume that British people don't use sleep trackers or get into this Californian lifestyle, and that that's why it's because he's moved to California and he's adopted all these practices.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's taking brain octane oil. And I mean, if you go into a coffee shop in LA, there are a lot of things you can add to your coffee. Even in Stoke Newington, no one's offering like a spirulina shot, are they? So
not yet, no.
But maybe it's just what he loves.
But what I thought was perhaps the oddest thing of all of it, he drinks PG tips. For God's sake. You can get your hands on any tea in the world and you go for a PG tips. Dishwater.
What's your preference?
Yorkshire tea. I mean, non-negotiable.
Yeah, me too.
A good old Yorkshire tea. I don't even know what my second would be.
Clipper organic English breakfast is very good.
Yeah, Clipper's quite nice. I'm actually astounded that he permits caffeine to enter his absolute temple of a body.
That's true. Maybe he just swirls it around his mouth and then spits it out into that coconut he's just finished husking.
It's probably his one, you know, his one thing that grounds him, makes him feel like he's still the Canterbury boy he used to be. Anyway.
Well, on that note, I'm off to have some brain octane oil. By which I mean a second coffee.
Ooh, lovely. I might have a second coffee.
Yeah.
Although I had three coffees yesterday and I gave myself a jittery headache.
Did you? I had four the other day.
Four?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you must have had to peel yourself off the ceiling.
Especially because when I make them at home, I make a double shot. So.
Jeez.
Twitchy. That's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for joining us. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review and subscribe.
You can hear more from us via our bi-weekly newsletter, which comes out every other Sunday. Sign up for that at thewingwoman.co.uk.
You can also find us on social media at Frankie Braddon, at Charlie Gowans, and collectively at thewingwoman_, and email us at thewingwomanofficial@gmail.com.
And we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Take care.